Hey guys, welcome to episode 52 of the JV Club. We've done it! Ladies and gentlemen, we have made it to 1 year. I'm so delighted and thrilled. Obviously, I have so many friends who have podcasts who have been doing it for years. I do feel like a bit of a late bloomer in some ways, but you know what? This is our special JV Club timeline. And in that timeline, all that matters is we've turned one. I want to thank all of you guys who have been with me since the beginning. I certainly want to thank all of you who have joined us along the way. It has been such a joy. I've said it before. I'll probably say it a dozen more times. My life has changed because of this podcast. In large part due to you, the listeners. I want to get some shout outs in here straight away. If you are new to the podcast and you're tuning in because you're a fan of Sarah Silverman, just know that every week I like to lull everyone into a sleepy, bored state by giving podcast shout outs before I get into the episode itself. So hunker down because you're about to hear what that sounds like. I want to thank on the Michaela Nerdist page, Joseph, Emily, PJ, Scott B, and Lauren H. On the Carla Gallo Nerdist page, Harvey, Spencer, John G, Alec, Paul, Starbuck, that guy from Austin, and Meg. On the Facebook page, I want to thank Jessica, John N, Rick S, Brendan, Feast the Bread, Brendan, Feast the Bread, Liz D, Adam B, Alexis B, Amy C, Gabriella F, Tammy C for posting her Deadbeat Club / JV Club lyrics, Michelle M, and then on Twitter, I want to thank Ken F, who shares my love of Emma Thompson, Anna S and Kate M for weighing in on Downton Abbey, Nita and Shmoo, Hannah, anybody else who wished me a speedy recovery from the cold, which I, by the way, still have not gotten over. I hope you don't get this, you guys. I mean, I'm certainly not suggesting you can get it from listening to this podcast, but I hope you don't get whatever this virus is that's going around. I hope it doesn't make it to you in whatever far reaches of the world this podcast finds you in. I want to thank Liza A via email, Jackie F, Jody C, Jessica B, and Pierre Jerome for your emails. And then, of course, from the J.Varney at SF Sketchfest PayPal account, for those of you who've been contributing to help your fellow podcast listeners get buttons and to start a t-shirt fund, I want to thank you so much. In this particular case, we're talking about Hannah J, NRD, JZZ, and Catherine R. Guys, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Before I get into the Sarah Silverman episode, I wanted to let you know that I did ask just a handful of fans, people who have been real consistent since the beginning of giving me feedback, weighing in on a regular basis. I didn't have much time for this. I really wanted to do like an extravaganza of an episode 52. And boy, it has just been still really crazy in Janet Varney land. So I just reached out to a handful of you, you know who you are, and asked you to weigh in on some of your favorite episodes and to give me some moments that you particularly liked. So what you guys are about to hear is just, you know, a few clips from episodes and moments that you, the fans, have particularly singled out. And again, there are so many and too many to do here, but this is just a little bit of a sampling. I want to first bring in a lot of people's favorites, a moment with Allison Brie.
I go back out and they're like, Allison, you're up next on the beam.
I get on the balance beam. You see where this is going. I get on the balance beam. I get halfway. I'm dead center on the balance beam. And this is like a big gym. All the kids' parents are there watching. I have to stop, like, you know, when you have to pee so bad and you can't even move, and then I just go. I just pee right in the middle of the high balance beam and just down my leg, onto the beam, onto the mat. Kids are screaming.
My God.
The teacher was like, my dad's there. He comes running up to the teacher like, what's happening? The teacher goes to my dad, I don't know what's going on. She just peed.
And then here is something from the Elizabeth Lame episode.
My mom was furious when we brought her home from the pound because my dad took me and my sister. And she knew that this dog was going to be like 100 pounds. And my mom was 5 feet tall and weighed 100 pounds. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, Daisy just became too much to handle. And we kind of just kept her. This sounds horrible.
Oh, no.
But it's true. We kept her like in the basement.
Oh God!
It was a finished basement.
Oh no! Oh no!
And who could forget this sterling moment with the one and only Natasha Leggero?
say this. I had a lot of responsibility as a child. I was kind of like in charge of babysitting and cleaning. Like I'd iron my brother's clothes and take care of them. And so I was definitely like a mom.
Yeah. Why? Did, so I wait, think your brother wore clothes that needed to be ironed? Well,
Who was he? To private school.
Was he a CEO?
In my world, he was a CEO.
In my world, everything is rumpled and awful unless you're a CEO. And speaking of clothing, a lot of people enjoyed Vanessa Ragland's description of Pictoria's Secret.
And I had a Miss Piggy. Oh, no, it was Pictoria's Secret shirt, and I thought it was hilarious.
Let's just say that again for the listeners. Pictoria's Secret.
She was in the bustier.
Well, first of all, I guess okay, a couple things. Number one, was this something that was Victoria's Secret related? Like, I'm trying to remember, because I do remember the Muppets being involved in parody.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to think if it was like, it was a Muppets brand thing making fun of the idea of Victoria's Secret, or if somehow it was in conjunction with the company Victoria's Secret.
I don't know, because I think it was really pushing those boundaries, because it was like the exact Victoria's Secret logo. Yeah. I didn't really know what any of that was, but it was like this, it had like this long thing, like this sexy, sassy, bustier. I memorized this whole shirt, and I would like, if somebody complimented me, I would just like read off the whole, Vanessa.
Victoria's Secret.
I really loved Miss Piggy. Miss Piggy's Guide to Life had that book.
And since I can't seem to get off the clothing jag, here's a moment from Maggie Lawson's episode when she talks about her first kiss.
And, you know, there was just the day that he came over and we were in my basement, and he brought a friend with him, and his friend left the room. Like, I saw like a little exchange happen between the two of them. Yeah. And his friend left the room, and then he like planted it on me, and I was like, whoa. And then there was like a pause, and then he kissed me again. Oh. So I got like the double.
You did.
And I remember what I was wearing, because
please tell me.
Obviously a Coca-Cola sweatshirt. Because they were so hip. And so in, and it was red. And the reason I'll always remember that is because after, are you crying?
Oh my God, if I were crying. Now I wish I were crying.
I love Coke so much.
I walked upstairs and my mom said, did he just kiss you? And I was like, and she was like, because your face is as red as your sweatshirt.
Okay, guys, again, so many more that I wish I could have played. We'll do some more greatest hits down the line. But I think almost everyone that I asked or who reached out to me said we would be remiss if we did not include just a moment of Priscilla Ahn's amazing cover of Before You Were Brittle. And as soon as that finishes up, we'll lead you into the episode proper with Sarah. It's an episode I recorded quite some time ago. You'll hear references, for example, to upcoming elections. I think we all know we have already completed those elections and then some, including an inauguration, guys. But it's an episode I was holding on to. There's some sensitive subject matter in it. I want you to know that although it's made fun of, it's certainly a very sensitive matter and something I don't take lightly. Please feel free to contact me if you have thoughts on that. You'll hear what that is in the episode itself. But this is pre-MASH, pre-fortune teller, all that stuff we hadn't started doing yet. So enjoy the episode with Sarah Silverman as soon as we take a little listen to the gorgeous strains of Priscilla Ahn's cover from Back Before We Were Brittle from the live Lizzie Kaplan at LA Podfest episode. Thanks, you guys. Happy birthday to us.
Save kittens from trees and lunch on skyscrapers, bring the villains to their knees. Maybe we should move someplace new.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
welcome to the JV Club. This is Janet. I don't know why it wouldn't be me. I am sitting. Oh, I'm sitting on a couch, accompanied by the one and only Sarah Silverman. There may be more than one Sarah Silverman, actually.
There are several, actually. Yeah.
You're my one and only Sarah Silverman.
Thank you, Janet.
I'm not comfortable with the idea of even meeting another girl named Sarah Silverman, so.
Yeah. Sometimes when I Google myself, I see other Sarah Silvermans who scored a goal in soccer. Mm. And to that Sarah Silverman, I say, you go with you your go. Bad self.
You go, Sarah Silverman. There's a couple of Janet Varneys, which I was surprised by. I don't feel like I have a name. I think I had the ego of a name that I thought would never, that wouldn't be possible for another Janet Varney to exist.
I can't imagine another Janet.
But there
Janet
are,
Varney.
In fact, a couple of others. I don't know if any of them live in the States. The one that I'm most aware of is a nurse in New Zealand.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Very curious about her.
Yeah.
Like, that's just interesting enough and different enough to seem like maybe I should go out there and meet her. Is that a reason to cross the world? Maybe
Janet not. Varney? Janet Varney.
Janet Varney. Janet Varney.
Oh, nice. I it's wanted totally to different. Do that, but I didn't know totally how. Different.
I had to think about it maybe longer than the listener had time to put in. So I just finished saying, guys, full disclosure, right before we started recording, I said, Sarah, I don't want to make you rehash the wonderful tales in Bedwetter, which is what's so like, that's what's hard about a podcast like this, is that she's sort of my dream podcast guest for what this podcast is. Yet has she said it all already? Have we covered her entire adolescence in her book? I don't think we have.
I don't think so.
So we're going to skip past the bedwetting stuff. If you guys want to hear about bedwetting until 16,
I was a bedwetter until I was 16. I thought it was going to be my deepest, darkest secret of my life. Turns out, you get older and then it's really not a big deal at all.
Yeah. It is interesting how it starts to feel good to talk about and make fun of the things that felt so mortifying when you were a teenager and younger.
Because you want to go back and go, it's not a big deal. Yeah. It doesn't have any bearing on your coolness.
Yeah.
If anything, it's given you skills that have helped you be cool.
Like,
and what
if
is
someone
cool?
Says,
what's cool?
We can't hire you unless you can wet a bed.
Exactly.
You'd be like, sign
you've
me
come
up.
The right place.
Sign me up. So yeah, guys, so why don't you supplement this? If stuff comes up or if you have questions that you feel weren't answered, you may find that you have a resource at your fingertips in her book that you can turn to. And maybe I might have forgotten and get repetitive, but it is frankly an amazing book. But I'm not going to go into like you're the youngest of four daughters. What was that like? But I feel like we can just kind of jump around. Let me tell you some stuff that came up for me specifically when I was thinking about the fact that I was going to see you and that you were doing this podcast. Because with some guests, we kind of do that thing where I like go down the list. I'm like, and your mother's name is, and your father's name is, and think stories and anecdotes and stuff kind of come out from there. But one of the things that I love about you that I immediately kind of thought about when I knew I was going to see you was just this idea of I so relate to the kind of grown up kid / kid grown up thing that you have that I feel like I also have, certainly not to the same notoriety or recognition of like how you've been able to cultivate that in the work that you do and the shows that you've done and the music that you write and all that. But like, I so love that idea of like those two things kind of existing side by side. Does that make sense?
You mean, what do you mean?
I just mean like you're like being a grown up kid, like being like, you know?
Yeah. I never, you know, I mean, it's not something, and I'm sure you are the same way, that I think about.
Right.
Like, I'm just a big kid. I mean, I think my parents are the same way. You know, I just, you know, my dad dresses like a slob. My mom, you know, like wears two different color socks. I don't know. You know, I remember my mom looking in the mirror and going, "That's not me."
Yeah.
That's not me.
That's what my mom does.
And I kind of understand it because you just are this thing inside, you know, and yeah. And as your body is like changing and growing or aging or anything, you just go, it's just not how you think of yourself. But at the same time, it's just kind of an avatar for this stuff inside.
Yeah.
You know?
It's interesting. So you do think that you kind of got that from your parents?
Yeah.
That sort of like, who cares?
Well, there's this, I feel like kids and grownups often they forget to ask themselves, what do I like? What am I into? And they just follow this line of whatever they see in front of them and whatever the people around them want are their wants.
Yeah.
And whatever the people around them, you know, whatever is they think other people might think of as normal is what they strive for because of this fear of being not normal.
Yeah.
Like this terror of being whatever not normal is. And then you realize like those people around you that you think are normal and you're the weirdo are, you know, I mean, it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
You know, like the most important thing you have to remember is to just ask yourself, like, is this what I want? What do I like? What am I into? Based on not your friends, not your parents, not society, yeah. not commercials, not television, but I mean, just like what floats your boat? What music feels good in your ear holes?
Yeah.
You don't have to explain it or it doesn't have to be, maybe it's not what is cool to your friends or maybe... You know, or maybe it's like too popular and that's not cool. Then you're making decisions about your life based on a fear.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? What feels good in your ear holes? What feels good on in your eye holes?
Absolutely. And I feel like it's funny because I feel like, and that's one of the things that we talk about on the podcast a lot is the person that you, that whole avatar idea of the person that you are when that stuff starts to get fleshed out and how much of that you carry with you no matter how old you are. And I've talked to people in their early 20s and I've talked to people in their late 60s and everybody sort of feels like nobody says I am exactly the person that I was when I was 15 years old, but everybody kind of says, I think I thought I was going to feel a lot different. And yeah. And then some of us like me, I really do feel like, and I feel like it's reinforced all the time by people I run into who I went to grade school with who are just like, oh God, you are so the same, to the point where I feel like I should apologize for not being wiser. I feel like I should seem more together and wise, but I feel like, that idea of where your opinions come from, I mean, everything that you just listed off, it's not, don't do it because it's this, you don't have to feel this way because it's out there here and here and here and your friends like it or whatever. That can be really daunting. And you can sort of, I think I sort of had experiences when I was younger, especially in college, where I found myself going, I think I'm having like an identity crisis where I'm not sure that what I'm into is real. Like what I'm into is really what I'm into. I'm not sure if this music is pleasing to my ear holes.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that I'm pretty sure these jeans look terrible on me, despite the fact that everyone else is walking around wearing them looking terrible.
The first guy that I thought I had sex with when I was 18, before I realized what sex really was when I had sex... was a guy I was not at all attracted to, but knew all my girlfriends would think he was really hot.
Yeah.
And it's not funny. I mean, it's just like, it just means nothing.
Yeah. Well, plus with, I mean, I don't know if this boy, did this boy make, like, did you feel you sort of had the power in that situation? Or did you feel also like you were trying to be attractive to someone that you didn't even really like because other people would think it was cool?
No, he was like a man. He isn't anyone would have met at my high school. I was a senior in high school. I was visiting my sister in college at BU. And he came over her and her roommate's like place. And then my sister and her roommate went to do the AIDS walk. And we hung back.
Classic wingman, the AIDS walk.
And I just did not know what I was doing. I didn't fool around like in high school. I went to a tiny high school where like the guys there were like brothers. I mean, I did not find anyone attractive except for my history teacher, Mr. Burke. And so this was like my first, I mean, when I lost my virginity, I was already a comedian.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
So did you experience, like, did you feel like now I want to him in my life, or was it confusing that you didn't really know him and that you didn't?
Oh, that guy? Yeah, no, I felt no connection to him, that guy. I can't remember his name. It was like a odd name, like Brooks or something like that. I don't know.
Chaplin.
He had like a long beard and long hair, and he looked really Jesus-y, and, you know, I was like so not into it.
What made you and you had just met him, and he, what was it that
he came
that
over
happened,
the night
felt
before?
Like, I guess this is going to be the guy that I.
And we fell asleep watching Dead Ringers,
which is a hugely disturbing movie.
A very disturbing movie starring Jeremy Irons as twin gynecologist like murderers.
It sounds like it's a joke, and it's a real movie that's extremely disturbing with like very twisted gynecological instruments that. Oh, David Cronenberg. So that's really messed up right there that you felt.
Then the next morning, you just like climbed on top of me.
This is the guy that you didn't think that you thought that you had had sex with, but you didn't really?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, then the real time with the comedian was like, I was beyond ready for it and like loved it and was just like, I want to have sex all the time. And then I did for about a year.
you're allowed. You're allowed. And listen, that's what you wanted. That's what felt good to your other holes. But I guess, I don't know, what that brought up for me was this idea of like, you know, you thought it was somebody that your friends would think was cool that you did that with. And then when you put, for me anyway, because some of the sex that I had when I was in high school, I not only was I doing it with someone that I probably shouldn't have been, but I also then handed over this emotional power to someone I didn't really respect in the first place. That's like layers on layers on layers of confusion.
It's like, even though it wasn't the right person and maybe you realize that in the cold light of day, you still get the added feature of feeling rejection.
Absolutely. And I tie that teenager feeling in, not that that ever really goes away, but so much of what you experience as a teenager reminds me of like being in this particular business, which this podcast isn't about being in this business, but just this idea of like attaching value to something that you have no respect for just based on wanting the positive reinforcement from it. Like, I really don't want this part. This is a terrible script, but now that they seem disinterested in me, it feels like maybe it was the best thing I've ever read.
Right.
Like, how do we, like, that feels so close to that person that had butterflies in her stomach that I was when I was 15, 16, all the time.
Well, I mean, look at that, whatever that, the game or whatever that book is that teaches guys how to pick up girls. I mean, they tell the guys to reject the girl you want, to neg her or whatever, you know, say a negative, say. And I understand how that works, like, because it's funny because I was at a party and a man came over to me. This was recently, and he was like, yeah, I've seen your comedy. It's pretty good. whatever. And I go, and he goes, when I got the text to come over to this party, I was on top of a teenager, but, he was just saying all this stuff. Then he says like, oh, I've seen your comedy. It's pretty good. I mean, if you're if you just think it's pretty good, then you'd probably not say anything at all unless you really wanted me to like go like, well,
what could make it better?
Yeah. So, but anyway, he's saying all this stuff to me and I just go, oh, sweetie, I'm just, I have like way too much self-esteem. I'm too old to be intrigued by this or like need your approval, but you're adorable.
What did he do?
He was just like,
I gotta go get on someone.
But it is like, I'm at a point where I find it adorable.
Yeah. You know, like, what a relief, right? To get to a place where you just can't engage in that way. And
when I was 18, I was a cocktail waitress and I it was terrifying. I mean, you know, I was a good girl, you know, and I worked for these two guys that, you know, own this place, the Margaritaville Lounge in Manchester, New Hampshire. And it was a real like sham of a place, like, you know, when they run out of tortilla chips, bring them more, but you charge them $1.50 for it, you know, and all this stuff. Anyway, I got called into one of the boss's office. I was so nervous. I thought I was in trouble. And he's just making conversation. Hey, you like working here? You know, and I'm like, yeah, you know, and
that's my heart
pounding, like just so nervous. And I look, because he's just making small talk. And he has his penis out and is like stroking his penis. And I went, I have to clean the popcorn machine. And I walked out and I cleaned the popcorn machine. And looking back on it, I never told anybody. Yeah. And that's why they prey on 18-year-olds or girls who put it on themselves or like, that's the reaction to that. I wish so much that he did it to me now or 10 years ago even. You know, it's like it would have been hilarious to me. I would have told everybody. But that's why guys like that don't prey on you know, fully realized women. Yeah. They prey on girls who think it must be them and that it's a secret.
Yes. In fact, I have not ever said this to certainly not anyone in any time in public, but because you've just said that, I will say this. Someone basically molested me on a flight.
Oh my God.
Like someone sitting next to me was like touching me after we had made some kind of cursory friendly conversation when I was 16, and it was a red eye and I was by myself, and he started touching me and I like under a blanket, and I literally thought to myself, yeah, I was probably too nice to him. Like, I should just let this happen until it ends.
You let him on. You let him on.
I never said anything
to
anyone.
Isn't that amazing?
And what bothers me about that, and I don't know if you feel this way also, but like, what does haunt me about that is, who else did he do that to? Like, I feel so guilty that I didn't do something to try to stop him from ever being able to do that again. But I was 16. I think it's the cliche of like, it was a red eye. I was like disoriented when I got off the plane. I think I was like, did I imagine that? Like, what was that? And super creepy.
Oh God. Yeah. So many experiences like that happen. And I think we're brought up to think that adults know better. So you just don't question it.
Yeah. I'd like to invite anybody, and this is not where Sarah and I did not set out to make this a molestation-centric interview, but given what we've both just said, I encourage you, feel free to tell someone. Feel free to tell someone. Feel free to email me and just tell me if you want that something like that happened. This stuff happens a lot, and if you have any shadow of a doubt of like what I just described, which is I wish that I even just would have said something so that maybe somebody else after me wouldn't have experienced it, and hopefully no one ever did.
But I'm sure
by all means reach out, and probably they did. And you should have charged your boss $1.50 commensurate with bringing tortilla chips is what I would equate that to. Of course I am making light of something horrible because there's no way I'm going to spend the rest of the time talking about this, but I definitely encourage you guys to reach out and give your feedback here as well. All right, we're talking about boys. There's nothing wrong with that. What were you? I ex- experienced a lot of like, how feminine do I need to be exciting to a boy? And I think I still experience that now. That hasn't really changed in some ways. And I feel like I identify with you as well and being like, I'm a girl, but I'm not a girl, but I'm a girl, but I'm not a girl. Like, what, you know what I mean? Did you struggle with that? Did you feel like, how pretty do I need to be? How, like, and about my, the way I carry myself and present myself to the world, not just physically, but as a human being, how does that play in with like boys and flirting and dating?
You know,
and
I'm from New Hampshire and the thing about New Hampshire, well, there's this kind of, girls play sports there. You know what I mean? So it was like the girl athletes were cool. You know, I mean, I played sports and it was, girls play sports in New Hampshire. I don't know. I can't explain it other than it's not seen as, you know, so it's like I was athletic and I did the plays and stuff. And, but, point being what, Sarah?
I think I asked a really non-question question.
I know, you know, obviously, like, one way means that I found to survive being, for whatever reasons, like the dynamics in my family, the way I got approval, the way I deflected being ridiculed or made fun of, was that I found being funny, you know, and I was self-deprecating and I was the class clown and all that stuff. And that, you know, comedy is traditionally, it's a very masculine thing, and it's a, and I don't want, you know, not necessarily masculine, but it felt, I only associated it with masculine, but it's power. Mm-hmm. And power is associated with things that are masculine in our society. And when women are powerful, they don't get the boys necessarily or things like that, you know?
Well, yeah, because to your point, the game, the book The Game, doesn't want you to pick up powerful women, because A, they'll see through that, and B, it's kind of hard to create that power structure.
So, I mean, you know, and in relationships, I do tend to be, you know, and I'm not saying young girls do this at all, but I tend to be more submissive in a relationship because I want to be the girl. I want to, in a relationship, I mean, look, it's give and take. And ideally, you're both each other's biggest cheerleaders. And, you know, but it's hard because you want to have that dynamic. I mean, that's not hard. I mean, I love adoring somebody, like it feels good, you know? And just loving someone to pieces, it's easy for me, you know. I love it.
Me too.
You know, and I just want to be able to do that, you know. And it sometimes it's hard, the mix of your strong life and your life where you want to be able to be so totally vulnerable.
And how, and at the beginning of something, if you're flirting or courting or however you want to look at it, whether you're 15 or 45 or 75, that sort of dance, in a straight relationship and in a gay relationship and any relationship, it's so hard because it's confusing to try to put all of that out there at once. And I'm a really impatient person, so I feel like I want someone to understand that, like, in moments I need to feel like I'm in charge because it's scary to be vulnerable, and then in other moments I want to be taken care of, and in yet other moments I want to be like teased, but in like a sexy fun way. That's a lot.
I know.
That's a lot to ask and to expect
and
at the beginning of something.
And guys are not mind readers. But I'm pretty good at asking for what I want, and, you know, sometimes I get it and sometimes I don't.
Yeah.
But you know, if we're talking about relationships, the best thing I've learned is that we're all responsible for our own happiness. If you're, you know, to be with someone who depends on you to be happy is a downward spiral waiting to happen. You know, I love the feeling of making someone happy, but you want them to come happy. You know, yeah. You want them to be open and working on their stuff, you know, and figuring things out, you know. We're born perfect, but we're raised broken. Yeah. And even at a young age, you can just start observing your life and your feelings and going like, why do I feel this way? Or, you know, I mean, we have whole lives of misplaced anger, and I'm talking out of my butt right now, but there's a lot of truth to it. You know, it's like finding yeah. out where feelings are coming from, the root of them, and then just practicing being aware of that is the key to a happy life, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't have... I think, especially as a teenager, I couldn't understand why I felt the way I did, and I was so spirally about it. And I think I was a real thinker as a kid. I mean, I kept a journal every day. I thought I was working through everything, and heavens knows I was trying. I mean, if I go back and read that stuff, I really am like, I don't understand why this, and why would they? And I think I thought I was really puzzling through my own feelings. But I will say that now when I do revisit those journal entries from my high school years, I was still really just asking, why doesn't this person feel this way? What do they want? What do they think about me? So I thought it was about what I wanted and what I thought and how I felt.
It was all external.
But it was all about trying to understand other people's actions and their motivations. And I should have spent more time asking myself the questions you brought up earlier in the podcast. Like, what do I want? Do I like this person? Why do I care that this girl is so mean to me? If she's a jerk, yeah. Why am I spilling my guts out onto the page, like trying to figure out and understand what I must have done to make her dislike me?
But just the study of trying to understand people and where their behavior comes from is great. Looking inside, coupled with looking inside yourself. But in terms of like, you'll never escape caring about what other people think of you. But if you can keep it in check and realize, you know, we might just be, it might just be you, listener, and we might be a created thing in your brain that punishes and rewards yourself through these other avatars that don't exist. So don't put too much weight on what people think of you, because they don't matter.
Yeah.
Unless they matter to you. But I wanted to say something else I was excited about. Shoot. Love, life. I don't know.
Relationships. Oh, I was thinking earlier, because I was thinking earlier about the idea of going all the way back to the silliness and your parents. And I was thinking about the fact that my mom ordered, when I was a little girl, she ordered these Del Monte plush vegetables that you could get. They're like little tiny plush toys that you could get if you sent in canned food labels from Del Monte. We didn't have any money. And so it was a big deal. So we were like saving up our Del Monte food labels, and we sent them off, and she very carefully picked out which plush animals she wanted. They were plush vegetables and fruits.
Yeah.
With little like rosy cheeks and pink lips. And she got them back. And I think somewhere in the back of my mind, I just assumed she was sort of doing all of this for me because I was the kid. But like, she really didn't want me to touch them because she was really into them. And she wasn't into them. She's not like a collector who puts something on a wall, but they were her toys. Aww. And she still, to this day, has like the most whimsical relationship with toys and little small things and animals. And she has a really, really tiny apartment, but she rotates out like some of the animals from when I was a kid that she couldn't bear to get rid of. And I'll be talking to her on the phone, and she'll be like, well, it just took Snarfy the dog back out of the trunk, and so he's at the foot of the bed. And you know what? At night, I usually give him a little pat and say, goodnight, Snarfy. Uh-huh. And I feel like the 13-year-old in me would have been like, my mom is crazy, and she's really annoying. And now, just, you know, I mean, really pretty much any time since after I wasn't – she didn't have custody of me at all. Like, once I was sort of out of the house and – realized that she wasn't against me and everything I stood for at all, And now I think, please let me be like that for the rest of my life. I'm definitely like that now. And I love seeing the silliness and the giddiness of like, oh heavens, I don't care what anyone thinks about that. It's like a bubbly feeling, like when you get good news, when you realize that something that you're into, somebody else might think you're an idiot for liking. And when you realize you don't care, it is that feeling. Yeah. It's like someone was like, you just won a major reward.
It's a huge burden lifted.
It's so nice. So when you wanted to like impress a boy, and I don't know why, I mean, this is not, I didn't write down a bunch of questions about boys, but, I just feel like you're giving really good advice right now.
Yeah.
When you decided that you liked one, like how did you, like, would you, how would you pursue a boy? Like, how would you?
I don't have good examples of this because I never really had any kind of, I had little boyfriends in high school, but I didn't even
know
kiss
you said
them.
They were all like their your brothers. Yeah, so I guess it was, we're getting
like,
into
it was such a small school, and it just was like there was no one that made my heart like skip a beat except for my history teacher, Mr. Berg.
I loved my chemistry teacher, Mr. Matz. Aww. Big time.
Ugh. So when I moved to New York and I started doing stand up, then I fell in love with people because I grew up wanting to be a comedian and loving comedians. So all of a sudden I think it's a female trait to be more attract. You know, guy comics can date waitresses, and believe me, I've been a waitress. It's not all just one thing, but I'm just saying, women tend to be attracted to men they look up to, and who are have the same passions as them, and maybe are farther along in a place where their own passions lie, you know? So, you know, I fell in love with a million comedians, you know, and, yeah. The first one was this guy, Kevin Brennan. Do you know Neil Brennan?
Yeah.
He's his oldest brother of 10.
Oh, wow.
Neil's the youngest. And, he was the host, the MC of the open mic night, and he carried a briefcase, and I thought that was very cool. And I just was in love with him. And it was very much that kind of negative, like he acted like I was a kid that was wasting his time, and I loved that, mm-hmm, you know, and...
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I was in my 1 year of college that I went to, and he was like, do you belong to a sorority? And I'm like, yeah, even though I wasn't. He's like, what is it? And I'm like, it's only for cool girls, and I'm the only one in it. And then he's like, want to see my apartment? And I was like, yes.
That all sounds familiar.
Yeah, I was very, not prudish, but I didn't have any experience with sex in or anything really, some kissing, but yeah. I didn't even, you know, wasn't into it in high school. And then when I moved to New York, I felt like I blossomed like a flower, and I just couldn't get enough, you know. I would
there's you're out in a world of like, you're not just in your college world, you're not having that collegiate experience of these are my peers and my professors.
Yeah.
You also entered into the world of like kind of agelessness in a lot of ways.
Yeah, well, you know,
doing comedy and
most of those people are still comedians and I'm still friends with. So whereas like I go to UCB and I'm friends with, you know, all these comics in their 20s, I also am friends with comics who are pushing 60,
yeah,
who were the grown-ups when I started, and yeah, you know, you don't let go of them either, you know. Yeah. You have this this giant diverse group of friends that are span in age, you know, over like 40 years or something, you know, and culturally every, you know, comedians are such a specific breed, and you end up kind of feeling most comfortable around them, but they're culturally so diverse, you know, and
yeah,
and it's a very odd, it's kind of, you get this feeling like you're a part of very proudly this part of the you know, land of misfit toys.
That's a good way of putting it.
And I love it. I love, you know, when you're at a party where you don't know anybody or it's all, you know, grown-up-y people, and then another comedian walks in, you're like, and even if you're not close with them or you don't know them well, you just go,
yeah,
you know, and yeah, find a corner.
I'll be understood and heard in some way that I couldn't be otherwise,
yeah,
here in this
we
environment.
We can be on the outside looking in, yeah, comfortably together.
I totally relate to that. Just your point about diversity did make me want to ask you a question about, so you went, it was a Dairy Field? Is that the high
Dairy
school?
Field,
Dairy
yeah.
Field,
yeah.
What it, were there openly gay kids when you were in high school?
You know, when I was in high school, it was a long time ago. But yeah, there was. There was one openly lesbian girl. What was her name? I want to say Shelly, but that can't be right.
Shelly, right.
She was very cool. I don't remember any gay, openly gay boys.
I just think that's so fascinating. I was thinking about that with my own high school the other day. Like, oh, I just had one gay friend. And I know just by virtue of keeping in touch with a lot of my friends who are now gay,
right,
who were then. But it doesn't feel, I don't feel old enough to feel like there could be that much of a difference between high schools now and high schools when I was in high school. But sure enough, if I look back and think, really, I only had one gay friend? That's not possible.
Oh. I wonder who is gay from my, like, usually you can, you go, well, he wasn't gay, but he was gay. But right. I don't know. It was such a small school that it's actually possible, maybe, but.
Yeah, maybe.
Probably not.
Yeah.
But I think, well, you know, there's all these bullying suicides and, like, crazy stuff happening. And so, in a way, you know, I think we're living in a crazy dichotomy where
we are.
You have shows like Glee where there are openly gay kids and being gay is supported and it's a very popular topic and it's, you know, kids are getting educated about, you know, that people are different and families are different. We live also, though, in a very sheltered, liberal world, you know, and
the dichotomy is
and the dichotomy
huge,
is
huge.
We're living in far more conservative times than this, you know, say the 70s or 80s. I mean, you know, it's really terrifying. That Rick Perry commercial is horrifying. It's terrifying. It's it would be funny if he wasn't popular but and have power and influence, but he is popular and has power and influence, and that is terrifying. And, you know, people go, well, he'll never win. And, you know, all these candidates that are so closed-minded and really bringing religion into their campaigns, it's so scary. I can't understand this religion, mixing religion with politics. It's, you know, for these people who are so nailed to the Constitution and our forefathers said separate church and state, yet we still have a court system that says in God we trust over the judge, and you swear to God to on the Holy Bible, one religion, to tell the truth.
Yeah.
That is effing crazy to me. I can't get my head around it. And I feel like everybody just accepts it like, it's just the way it is. I mean, it's wrong.
Yeah.
It doesn't include me. So if I go to tell, you know, testify in a court case, does that mean I can lie? I mean, how about you just tell the truth because that's the right thing to do? And this is, you know, it's not that you're going to go to hell necessarily unless you believe in hell. I mean,
it is really confusing. And I guess the what's funny about it and what gets skirted about it is that, like, I think to your point about our founding fathers, they wanted a separation, but there's this underlying assumption that it's like, I mean, we're all saying we all believe in the same Holy Father and, like, we believe in the Bible.
Yeah.
We're just saying, let's not make it so much about that, rather than, like, no, we have to take that in such a literal way now, where we have to say the expectation can't be that even this small piece exists swearing on a Bible, putting your hand on your heart and swearing that you're part of the American, yeah, that you're part of the American experience under one nation under God.
It's so elitist, yeah. And that's just it's the opposite of what this country's supposed to be about. Give us your poor, your shelter, your yearning to whatever that stuff is. That means give us everybody from any country.
Nor hail, nor.
Now we can't have strong enough borders, and the Christian God is our God. And that's the way it is. And anyone else is anti-American and unpatriotic. And it's not,
which isn't to say that people who believe in the Christian God also believe, like, necessarily that they're right. If you guys are listening out there and you're like, well, I believe in a Christian God, and I'm not saying you can't have an
elite. But you're not making everybody else believe it.
Yeah.
And saying that they don't count. I mean, of course, believe in anything you want. That's the beauty of freedom and being, having anything you want in your mind and believing what you want to believe. But to put part of that freedom is letting other people have, you know, those freedoms and respecting them. It's just so scary, you know? And we look at Germany like, ew, it's so tainted from the Holocaust. Mm-hmm. Well, we live in a country where we stole everything and from the natives that lived here who upon arrival gave us anything we wanted. Anything they had was for the pilgrims to have. They didn't even understand the concept of have. And the pilgrim and the pilgrims came and scalped them for hair to sell in Europe and took their land and raped them of everything they have and killed them off with blankets filled with tuberculosis. So we're not exactly. And then we brought in slaves and most black people living in America come from a heritage of slavery.
Yeah.
So, you know, this country has got a lot of blood on its hands and still does and continues to. You know, we all, people always say, well, if the Holocaust happened now, I would have done something about it. Well, the Holocaust is happening now all over the world. So, you know, you can understand how easy it is to be complacent and you should have nothing but sympathy for people who didn't help the genocide of the Jews, because unless you're doing something about the people in Sudan or learning about, you know, Darfur. Oh, I got really preachy.
I'm glad you did. I think there's a real lack of action taking in our youth culture of today, and certainly in our overall American culture of today. I think, to your point, we do look backwards at the Holocaust and at Germany and the taint that you described is like
taint.
We have the taint in presently right now all over the world. People react to us currently, what we're doing right now today, the same way we turn our noses up at Germany, like right now.
Yeah. Well, do you remember? I think I'm older than you, but.
Well, I'm 21.
Van Halen, me too. Van Halen had a video when Sammy Hagar joined the band called Right Now, and it's, you know.
Oh my gosh, Right Now.
Do you remember that video?
Right Now.
Hey, it's your tomorrow.
Well, yeah, it was like an educational video.
I mean, it was really badass at the time, you know. And I remember, like, and it just had like phrases, like, and hard truths, and
like, you're enjoying this song, but don't forget that blank is happening right now.
It also happened to be like the song to Pepsi Clear. I think, but anyway, one
just
of the
to put it in its place a little bit.
Yeah, one of the like phrases in the video was like, "Right now, your country is doing things you thought only other countries did,"
I totally remember that one.
I just it hit me hard and like got embedded in my brain, and I think it's in. I love America. I mean, I love America, but I do think it's important to be very, very suspicious of politics.
Yeah, and be responsible to the love that you have for it. And if you feel a pride in it, make real sure that the pride is justifiable. Yeah. And that it's not about assuming that you're better than someone else somewhere else. That's really, really dangerous. Yeah. We have a few
minutes.
It makes
the horror of things that happen all over the world less scary when you think that they are not like you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah. It's nobody sitting in a room anywhere thinks I'm the bad guy. Mm-mm. I mean, who thinks that? Like, that's, it's so over, it's such an oversimplification, and we have, but that's sort of what we're, that's how, that's what we're taught, even just through our fairy tales, through our stories. Like, it's really hard to find a story that's simple, that's about, that's like for kids or whatever, when we're, like, what feels safe to us is to, is the us versus them. So, like, the villains, yes, are all, like, villains who know their evil and relish their evilness. So I think our expectation as we get older is, like, well, Saddam Hussein must be sitting in a room somewhere, like, counting his skull collection. And, you know what I mean?
There
and,
are
like,
no evil villains. They're just gold super and blood, damaged, yeah, people.
And raised, no, those, like, nobody veal says, I know, I mean, unless you're clinically insane and you're sort of owning your owning your evil because that's part of your disease, nobody thinks I'm evil and I'm doing all, and I've come to this place and have all this power because I'm an evil mastermind.
It's not to say that evil actions don't happen.
They rape, do, but molestation, my point is, what's terrifying, incest, is that I think
putting
most of those
two planes through, but the people who do it believe they are doing good, or right, they believe they are, it is a power beyond them. You know, so it's, you have to, education and understanding and straight up some form of therapy is the only way to world peace. I mean, yeah, you know, because we'll never all agree on stuff. But boy, people are just messed up. You know, Mr. Rogers quoted some woman named Mary something, and I can't remember her last name. And she said, there isn't anyone you couldn't love once you've heard their story. Mm. And when I think about high school and the alliances and the enemies and all that stuff, if you can just keep in mind and have compassion for even the bullies and the kids getting, as much as the kids getting bullied, there is some way to overcome, like, a lot of the horror of teenagerhood. A lot of it is chemical. You're going through the biggest changes of your lives, and it's this is what I was gonna say way back when.
Nice.
It makes me crazy when parents or adults laugh at the heartache or the of children and teenagers. Oh, yeah. Like, the pain and the heartache that adults trivialize because they're adults. I mean, it's just as real, more real, more painful, real. More,
yeah,
hurtful,
I felt things
more
deeper,
feelings,
stronger.
And you're feeling things for the first time, and it's really intense. And it needs to be, it needs a little sympathy.
Agreed.
A little patience and a little kindness. And it makes me crazy when people go, oh, she's heartbroken over
she's
her history teacher.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you're like, guess what? You'll probably never feel again what she's feeling right now.
Yeah, parents, take it fucking seriously.
It's hardcore. That's why people say, I would never go back and do that again.
Never.
That's the same person who says that. It's like the same person who's like, oh, yeah, she thinks it's such a big deal. I'll tell you, I wouldn't go back to being a teenager. Really? Exactly.
Yeah.
You wouldn't go back to it because it doesn't get any harder.
It doesn't. If you guys can just exist, just literally, as Courtney Love said, live through this, you're going to get to a great place where you are an adult and completely in control of your life and control of your happiness and responsible for all of it. And it's good.
And hang on to that's what I was going to say earlier, too. I was thinking about some of the stuff that I used to do when I was a teenager that I kind of dropped somewhere in there when I became too worried about what other people thought. But like, in high school, I did dye my hair blue and I did wear like weird polyester house coats to school because there was some part of me that even though I cared what other people thought, I did want to find my difference and I did want to have a weird, unique voice and not feel and look like everybody else. And I allowed myself to explore that. And then somewhere along the line, that sort of faded away and I kind of did become like, oh, I should probably, oh, I these people are wearing this, or like somehow I sort of stopped listening to that. And I feel like finding that voice again is like the best feeling in the world when you're like, God, these shoes are so comfortable. For sure they're ridiculous. For sure. And isn't that kind of great?
I mean, look, I like dressing up as a treat, but I'm not a discomfort person. Like, yeah. I find ways to make it comfortable. Every once in a while when I have to wear heels, I get so mad and I always bring flats. But when I'm like out at night at a diner or wherever and you see these girls come in late at night from their nights out and they're shivering and freezing from wearing skimpy clothes
and their feet are blue.
They're limping and shivering.
Yeah.
What's attractive about limping and shivering? Surely you deserve love without being so totally uncomfortable.
I know.
And I'll tell you, the guys that are into the shivering, limping girls are not the guys you want.
No, you don't.
You're attracting the wrong. You want the guy who's into the. Listen, junior year. I wore flannel pajamas to school every single day.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Did you vary or did you have one set?
No, I only have one set.
You just did it.
But I was clean. Like, I was clean, and then I'd put clean underwear and socks, mm-hmm. but I just wore the same flannel top and bottoms every day.
And what did people say? Were they like, oh, that's Sarah?
Yeah, no one said anything. No, I don't know. I didn't care at that point. At that point, by junior year, I had a best friend, and we were a force. Like, we didn't care.
The bubble, man. I remember that bubble. I had a girlfriend like that too, where I just thought it's possible that our friendship combined has created a superhero.
Yeah, and it wasn't an us and them. I liked everybody. You know, I mean, I didn't. I liked. I was, you know, I had always survived by being on the periphery. Like, nobody had a problem with me. Everybody liked me, but I was not the center of any one group.
Yeah, that's actually very much how I was.
Yeah.
Like, friends with a bunch of different people. Why would I, you know?
Right.
I don't want to. I'm not a cheerleader. I'm not a huge brain, but you guys are awesome and super smart and, I definitely feel like I sort of made it through that way. It would have been so stressful to be the center of a group.
Ugh.
Like, talk about compassion. I really feel for you super popular kids out there who are like the queen of your clique or the whatever, like the quarterback or what. I don't think I could have survived that. I needed to be able to just sort of fade back and observe and not feel like present all the time and watched all the time in that way.
Yeah, be thankful that you are not the prom queen or the quarterback, because a lot of times those people, that's the height of their lives and they never are happier than that time. Sometimes they do and they persevere, but listen, this is the point. You're pretty, you're not pretty, it doesn't matter. If your worth is in the avatar that is you, you're looking at a downward spiral in life. Your worth has got to be in what is in your brain.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I know a woman who's very, very sexy, and she has two daughters that she's raising with that power of sexiness, and it's heartbreaking because that's their self-worth, is that they They've got a sexiness. I love sexiness. I love feeling sexy, but I feel it for other, you know, sometimes I laugh because I'll be at a party and I feel so vital and sexy, and I go to the bathroom and I just laugh because I see myself in the mirror and I don't look nearly as good as I feel, but it's so much better.
Yeah.
To feel better than you look.
Yeah. Versus you know? Looking in the mirror and looking at yourself and going, why do I feel empty? Why don't I feel good? I look like I should. Like, that's confusing and scary. Why not look like crap and feel fantastic? And sometimes you get to feel and look fantastic at the same
time. Yeah, be pretty and enjoy that. But don't let that be what all you have to offer, because you're going to be in a lot of trouble.
I agree. And I'm going to cap it all off by saying...
that I'm pretty?
That you're pretty and you're sexy. And I respect you more now that I know how sexy you are. No, but I think it kind of ties into everything that we've been saying, which is like, if this makes any kind of sense, live your life and experience your life through your eyes, not through someone else's.
Yes. Because when you look at yourself the way you think other people see you, you're going to be wrong.
You're wrong.
Yeah.
And that's wrong. And you know what? That's a gift. Like, that is not that's not something that you need to take in any sort of a way other than like, oh, permission. Permission to not do that anymore. Permission to not do it anymore and just come from the inside out instead of take from the outside and just shove in wherever there's a hole.
Yeah.
And listen to what your ear holes like and what makes your ear holes feel good.
Yeah.
Sarah, thank you so much.
That was fun.
We really got in there.
We really dug around.
We rooted around.
To the nitty gritty.
We yelled even.
At the beginning, I thought, oh boy, I haven't had coffee and I'm not even finishing sentences. And I think I left like a little word out of a sentence that made it sound caveman-like.
Well, we're going to go back and edit it in with a robot voice. Really? So it'll just be like, I can't believe I didn't
believe
in that. Thank you so much for doing the podcast. And
thanks I love for the being... JV Club.
Oh, man. They love you. I'm stopping with that, guys. Thanks again.
Hey, remember when all of time stood still?
As always, the JV Club theme song is Before We Were Brittle, courtesy of the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.